Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats. This is a podcast for women over 40 who are looking for sane and frank advice about their health and wellness, especially through menopause. I'm Amanda Thebe, the original resilient bitch and menopause guru. In my work as a personal trainer and nutrition coach, and through my own personal experience, it became obvious to me information about menopause and this curious phase of our life was so ridiculously hard to find. And that's why I started this podcast. Join me every week as I speak to health and wellness experts on hot topics that directly impact you. I've made it my mission to help you by exploding a few myths, presenting you with the facts, and hoping to inspire you to be a healthy, strong person just like me. If you like this show, please subscribe and leave a review. Then go and tell your friends, and then go and tell your husband, and then tell the neighbor, and then don't forget to visit me at fitandchips.com. And now let's get started on today's show. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats with me, your host, Amanda Thebe. And I am going to be speaking this week to Katie Taylor, who is the CEO and founder of The Latte Lounge. The Latte Lounge is a community that was founded in June 2016. So she's coming up for her 3-year anniversary. She's married with like a million children. We can talk about that in a minute. But she worked for 25 years in PR, marketing, event organizing and fundraising for a whole bunch of charities. And the reason that she set up the Latte Lounge was after suffering from some debilitating perimenopause symptoms at the early age of 45. And that's sort of where Katie and I sort of meet, because we went through the same sort of thing. So I'm really going to dig deep on that today. Anyway, so now she's passionate about helping all women in midlife by providing them with a forum that's easy to understand, helpful, professional, and supportive. And of course, we know that that can really help women. But thank you, Katie, for coming on the show. It's great to have you on. I know we've been trying to do this for a while. So yeah, you're here.
Yay, thanks for having me, Amanda, finally.
There's this whole bunch of, and Katie's in the UK, I might add, but the Latte Lounge is global, so anybody can head on over there. But so Katie, let's just talk about your story. Do you still work in like the fundraising marketing for charities, or have you moved away from that now?
Well, the Latte Lounge is now my full-time job, and boy is it full-time. So I'm not doing that anymore, but I'm actually bringing all that experience into what I do, which is why I love what I do, because, you know, I get to bring my experience working with charities and sort of supporting people in a different way, in an online way.
And so let's just talk about like why it all started, like what happened. I mean, I really don't mind how deep you go into your experience through perimenopause, because often I get experts on the show and we talk about the symptoms and things women can do and things they can try in their lifestyle. But I haven't really had anyone on that's just been like raw and just said, you know, it was shit. It still is. And it still can be, even if you're on treatment and stuff. So yeah, tell us your story, please, Katie.
Sure. So, I mean, it started, I mean, as you say, I've got millions of children. I've got 4 kids and I was always a coper. So I was always managed to sort of juggle being a stay-at-home mum. And yeah, I've been thankfully married for 25 years to the same man. So I was always, you know, hopefully a good wife, but I was also working, on and off while I was bringing up my 4 kids. But it was when I decided to sort of go back, you know, when my youngest was at school all day, to try and go back to what I call proper working hours. But I just started feeling very tired to start with. And I kind of put that down to, well, you haven't worked these sort of hours for, you know, gosh, 15 years, and you're juggling, you know, your home and your kids and work. You know, maybe it's that. But the tiredness then sort of turned into, I just felt no joy. I felt like, I often describe it as kind of walking through mud or treacle. So, you know, we used to walk the kids to school, and that used to be a pleasure, and I'd sort of walk with other mums. But I found I was literally dragging myself out of bed and dragging myself back. And it was an effort to even go to work, and I'd get to work. And then I sort of had this brain fog where I just, you know, it was like I just couldn't think straight, very teary the whole time. And I just kept putting it down to just have juggling too many different things. So, you know, I eventually went to the doctor because I thought, oh, you know, maybe it's like iron deficiency, maybe I'm anemic. You know, you start sort of thinking it's all these things.
And then you've got Dr. Google things as well. It's got to be B12 or something. Most women have something in mind, but it's like there's nothing tangible, right? There's like lots of small things, but nothing like concrete to go in with, right? That's how I felt.
Yeah. And also I was a little bit overweight and unfit because I guess, you know, after 4 pregnancies, and they actually all ended up being cesarean sections, and I just found it very hard to juggle everything and sort of lose weight and get fit and all those sort of things. So, you know, the first visit to the doctor, he just sort of said to me, well, you know, I think you might be depressed. And I said, well, I can't be depressed because, you know, I've got a great life. You know, I didn't have too many money worries, you know, the usual, you know, great kids, supportive husband. I can't be depressed. And he said, well, you can either take antidepressants or you can just go and lose some weight. And, you know, and then that made me cry because I basically sort of felt, well, I'm just sort of fat and useless. And obviously I can't juggle doing all these things. I'm working. And then it just sort of carried on getting worse. I didn't take antidepressants that time, but I just, you know, went on diets and fitness regimes and tried to eat sort of more healthily and work less. He suggested going part time, and my boss, thank God, was very supportive.
Yeah,
it was great. I mean, ironically, it was a mental health charity, so I think they got it. But then the second visit, you know, it was almost sort of, I think it was 6 months later, I went back and I was just crying, saying, I'm just not happy. I'm not enjoying my life at all. And he said, look, I think you should try some antidepressants. And that was it. And I thought, well, I'm going to try and see if it makes a difference. And it didn't. It just numbed me. So I just kind of then felt, well, I was coping with life, but nothing else. And I actually left that job after 6 months. I had a brilliant job. And I just thought, it's the job. I can't cope. Maybe it's working in a mental health charity is getting me down. And my husband, you know, said, look, we can cope without your salary for the moment. Just why don't you go and do some voluntary work rather than just, you know, because I was going home and lying on the couch and crying and really no energy and just sort of literally sleeping until the kids came home from school. And I thought, this is crazy. I've got a brain. I've got to do something. So I worked for a couple of years for another charity, but in a voluntary role so that I didn't have that huge pressure of having to show up if I was having a bad day. And then what happened was I had been back and forth to the doctor and they kept changing my antidepressants and I just said, it's not helping. But then the next symptom was that I started having, you'd never ask about my periods, but I started having very heavy periods, very, very heavy. And he said, oh, well, you're anemic. So, you know, just take some iron tablets because you're sort of losing.
Oh, I'm so I'm like literally rolling my head. But carry on. I'm not going to. I'm going to talk about all this afterwards. Okay.
I know. So he just sort of sent me off to get some iron tablets and dealt with this horrendously embarrassing sort of, you know, heavy flow. And then the next weird symptom was sort of my legs were swelling a bit, a lot of fluid retention and panic attacks, which I'd never had. So sort of anxiety. You know, I remember being on holiday in a gorgeous hotel and all I wanted to do was be home. And my husband kept saying, why can't you just enjoy yourself? You've got no pressure on holiday. And I just couldn't smile or laugh. I remember we went to the theatre one night and it was a very funny show. And I watched everyone in the audience laughing. And I just thought, you know, why are you such a miserable cow? Why are you not laughing? You know, why do you feel no joy? And it was after that, you know, holiday when I came back and I just remember going around to my father, you know, as you mentioned, he's a breast cancer surgeon. He's retired now. And it, you know, by then it had been 4 years. And by the way, I'd left that voluntary job as well because I couldn't cope with that. And ironically started another job because my sort of low self-esteem from feeling that, you know, I can't even do a voluntary job. Maybe I need another proper job again. Right. And that sort of coincided with coming back from that holiday. And it was again after 6 months. And I just thought, I can't cope with this other job. But my dad turned around and said, I think this is hormonal. You know, you are, you know, no one has spoken to you about your periods. And I, you know, so he sent me, thank God, he sent me to a gynae who he worked with at UCH in London. And honestly, within half an hour, she said, well, this is just classic perimenopause. And I sort of said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, every single symptom you've told me about is perimenopause. And it was like a light bulb moment because I'd never heard of that word. And I said to her, but, you know, I'm in my 40s. It's like, I can't be menopausal. I'm having periods. I've never had a hot flush. You know, menopause is women in their 50s. And she said, no, you are. And sort of said, you need to be on HRT patches. So that's kind of the sort of background to it. And I honestly came home that night and I lay on my bed, and I've said this a million times, I lay on my bed crying, and I turned to Facebook out of frustration to see if I was alone in what I just sort of discovered. And the reason I set up the Latte Lounge, which was called Top Tips for Women Over 40, was because all the Facebook groups out there were for, you know, young mums with buggies and babies and nappy rash. And but there was nothing talking about us, sort of us midlife women. So I started this group, and to my absolute sort of shock and, I don't know, delight, I had 2,000 members in 24 hours want to join. And I thought, oh my goodness, okay. And I stayed up all night approving members. And as soon as I sort of said, well, you know, this is what I've just discovered, I suddenly got, well, I've been through the same and I've been through the same. And I thought, oh my God, I'm not alone. This is not me. You know, I thought I was going mad. I was led to believe I was going mad. And that's why I started the group, actually.
Yeah. So wow. So much to so much to unpack there.
Yes.
You know, when you tell your story and women say, oh my gosh, that just sounds like me, it relates so much. And I've been on like tons of podcasts as an interviewee, and I've told my story, and I've had like swarms of emails and direct messages. They tend to want to be private rather than on your personal page, right? Saying that's me, that's exactly me. Why aren't we talking about this? Why am we only just finding out about this? And when you were talking then, I actually thought, I'm going to write down every symptom that Katie had, and every single one was mine, and almost in that order as well, ironically. And even the way that you were treating your days, apart from the fact that you went to work, because I had my own business, and that's the only thing. But right down to what your first symptom was, and the tiredness, which I've talked about often, as it was to me like a chronic fatigue. It was a tiredness I couldn't sleep off, a tiredness that spending all day on the sofa relaxing and just trying to be calm wouldn't yet. It was a tiredness like nothing I'd ever experienced before. And like you, I've always been a coper, and I don't know if that's like sort of part of our like British upbringing, like this, you know, a soldier on type thing, you know.
Yeah.
You just, you know, there's a war to be won, just get on with it. And I wasn't getting on with it. I was really, I really had just lost the joy in life. There was nothing there. And I also went through very similar experience with my doctor. My symptoms, as well as the fatigue, were, I had vertigo. A lot of women get that as well. But the vertigo then changed to vision problems, and then loss of feeling in one side of my body. And in essence, after 2 years of testing, like MRIs, CAT scans, balance testing where they induce vertigo, like literally till you want to vomit and then see how quickly you recover, and all of these really invasive tests, that came up inconclusive. Yeah, you clearly aren't very well, but we don't know what it is. All of these medical professionals that were specialists never once said this could be perimenopause. And it was my story is similar in the way that I did go to a gynecologist, but it was just because I had an ovarian cyst, which lots of women have, right? Just to follow up on that, and my gynecologist said, yeah, your cyst's gone, but you're not okay, are you? And I did the whole breakdown. I was crying, saying, I don't know what's going on. I don't recognize myself. And, you know, I had all of the fatigue, and I'd lost joy and my mojo. And I'm like a fitness professional, a health professional. So I didn't have the unfitness and the overweight side of it, but I did have all of the symptomatic stuff that you had. And he just said, these are very typical perimenopausal symptoms, very typical. And he said, and especially when you're this corporate, this A-type personality that has absolute control over a life, like down to like the to-do box getting ticked every day, and the children's meals being cooked, and your work being done, and all of that went for me. And he just said, these are very typical symptoms. The visual and the vertigo things were migraines, which is an estrogen depletion type symptom. Only I didn't have a headache. I just had all of it was migraines with an aura, which is another thing that a lot of women complain about. And it was like this light bulb moment. I was like, after 2.5 years of testing, I realized I wasn't going crazy. I went home and I first of all went and had lunch with my husband, who just said, are we getting a divorce? Like, what's happening? He literally thought it was the end of our marriage because I was so checked out. Yeah. And I wasn't just checked out of our marriage. I was checked out of the children, everything. You were the same, right? It's like, it's so bad. And I was like, no, apparently this is perimenopause. It's all hormonal and I can do something about it. And then I wrote an article that I just wrote, and then it's like yours, it's been shared like 40,000-50,000 times. There was women like, oh my God, what, like this, why is there a misconception out there that menopause is your periods will stop and you will get hot flashes, but then you're in menopause. It's bullshit, and it's enough. And I know there's people like you and I that are talking about it a lot. And in the UK, there's this huge movement that I'm quite jealous of, with, you know, all of these great people talking about menopause, collaborating, writing articles and raising awareness. It just makes me so happy. It's a little bit slow. It's a little bit slow on this side of the ocean, unfortunately. The Atlantic, I'm finding that the traction isn't there, but there are people out there trying to do it. But for example, if I'm trying to reach out to an expert, a gynecological expert on menopause, I'm having easier access to the GPs in the UK than I am over here in the US, and that's something we can talk about. Let's go to the antidepressants, because that's like, so I, first of all, that whole big spiel about that I've just said is basically, I hear you, and I felt the same thing, and so many women haven't. We feel like we're going crazy. And I think the reason that your group, the Latte Lounge, has gone exploded, and I have one too called Menopausing So Hard that's just gone crazy, is purely because women are like, oh my God, I'm not going crazy. There's actually everybody's feeling this. There's women out there, we're all going through this, and it's so, so refreshing. Your first point of sort of therapy, as it was, or like your GP, who didn't even acknowledge that you were going through perimenopause, gave you antidepressants. We hear this a lot, don't we, Katie? This is happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's going wrong, and we're really campaigning for definitely over here, is that what I've realized now is GPs don't get any formal training during, the whole time they're, you know, medical school in menopause or perimenopause at all, which is shocking if you think about it, because actually, you know, they're trained in all sorts of other gynae areas, but this is, you know, it's this, and also in schools, you know, the curriculum is you learn about, you know, sort of protection, sex protection and giving birth, and then it kind of stops and nobody goes any further. And I think what's happened with the huge sort of scare stories around HRT and breast cancer, which have all been overturned now, you've got this whole generation of doctors who graduated when they heard that HRT caused breast cancer. So thousands of women you know, stopped sort of getting any treatment and doctors didn't offer it. And I think what needs to happen now is that if a GP sees a woman over 40, definitely over 40, I mean, often it can happen younger, but if you see a woman over 40 who's sitting in front of you, who seems a particular, you know, every other area of her life seems fine, you know, at least have a symptom checklist in front of you with a sort of 10 to 15 major symptoms, you know, and just sort of say, can you tick this list? You know, are you feeling this, 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 and this? How are your periods? You know, no one asked me about my periods. I mean, actually, they were pretty regular, so it wouldn't have been a symptom anyway. But, you know, as I said, I wasn't having hot flushes, but there was no line of questioning at all. And actually, over 45, you don't even need to have a blood test anyway, because symptoms are enough. So what's happened actually is that I, through the work I've been doing, I've linked up with a lady who you've probably come across, Diane Danzigring, who is a menopause counsellor. And Diane runs another Facebook group, which I link my group to, called the Menopause Support Network. And the reason I've done that is because my group has become much more than just menopause and perimenopause. It's about all areas of midlife. And my story was printed in a national newspaper last year. And I must have had another 2,000 members want to talk about it. And I felt I couldn't sort of deeply support them enough. So what I tend to do is that Diane writes lots of blogs for me on my website where I can signpost people to. But I often say, if you want some sort of daily, you know, conversations with sort of Diane, to join both our groups as well. And sort of Diane introduced me to Dr. Louise Newson, who is now one of our menopause GP bloggers and writes on our website as well. And what's happened is Diane's launched this hashtag Make Menopause Matter campaign, because she herself went through, she was thrown into menopause because of a hysterectomy with no warning, no HRT, nothing, and got to a very deep, dark place, very deep, dark place. And a bit like you and me, that once she was aware that what she needed was some HRT and some sort of therapy to get over the trauma, you know, she was driven to make change, because what's happening is women are not being supported in the workplace, GPs are not trained in this at all, and children are not learning about it at school. So these three key issues, she's put together this petition. And Louise Newson brought both of us with her to Parliament last month, actually. It was amazing. We had a roundtable discussion with Jackie Doyle, who's one of our health ministers here, and a few other MPs, to tell them the bleak facts. And the bleak facts are 50% of the population are women. They're going to all go through this. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of women like us who are being misdiagnosed with depression instead of perimenopause. And, you know, we're losing good people from work. Marriages are splitting up. You know, the highest rate of suicide in women are usually between the ages of 45 to 55. It's no coincidence. And it's shocking. So, you know, yes, you know,
that statistic I have never heard before.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow. I mean, for sure, I've researched into marriage breaks down and divorce rates, because it has to be connected. It has to be.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at people like, I mean, no one's saying that's why, but people like what happened with Kate Spade, for example. You know, here's a woman midlife who in theory has the world at her feet. You know, if you look deeper into, you know, her depression, you know, I'm not saying anything, but I've been reading articles that said that she could have possibly been in the throes of menopausal depression. And it's and I think the world is waking up to it slowly. I mean, talking about the state, Dr. Avram Blooming, I don't know if you know him, is fantastic. Okay. Avram is amazing, and actually he's a good friend of my father's, and we did a conference in October around Breast Cancer Awareness Month and World Menopause Day, and we brought Avram came over. His book Estrogen Matters is phenomenal. It's everything you need to know. And
well,
obviously,
I think that everyone should read that book.
Like, yeah, Absolutely.
And especially with your dad being a breast cancer specialist as well, because there's women going through breast cancer that then are forced into menopause and feel like they have no option, and they're struggling. They're struggling a lot with things like vaginal atrophy, that they're getting misdiagnosed as being having like thrush or candida, as they call it over here, and no options for them. And I feel so bad for these women, because there are valid options for them, and the research is I think he's amazing. I mean, so over here talking about like the difference between the US and the UK, and I mean, I have people listening, I know, to this podcast from Canada and from Australia. Like we need to have this conversation. But when you're talking about a healthcare system that's like so completely different, I mean, they've all got the pros and the cons. But over here, one of the problems in the US is just the fact that we don't have a national health system, and so healthcare isn't an option to everyone. I mean, I talk from a real privileged position where my husband's company pays for all of our healthcare. It's super, super, it's in the thousands and thousands, but the company pays for it. And we have to contribute, I think, $3,000 a year to it. And that gives me pretty much a good comprehensive healthcare. But I think it's the full cost would be in the tens of thousands. Then there's people who are low income that rely on Medicare, which is you know, the thing that Obama was trying to push. Oh, I miss Obama so much. But anyway, moving on. People like that, they struggle to just get basic healthcare needs met. Like they sometimes can't even afford to go to their doctor. There's also disparities between if you're like a white American and an African American. A black African American to the healthcare service that you receive. You know, there's so many issues out here. I don't even want to touch them. I actually don't know enough about them, but I just know from personal experience that even myself, I had a horrendous GP experience. And this goes down to education again. I went to see my primary care physician. It cost me $40 in copay to go and see them. If I didn't have insurance, it would have cost me $180 to go and see him. So first of all, that can stop women going.
Absolutely.
And I spoke to him. I've written a book on menopause. I'm waiting for it to be published. I know what I'm talking about. I go and see my GP and I tell him that I'm ready to go on HRT, that my symptoms have now got to the point where they're impacting my quality of life, and specifically fatigue, migraines, and depression. They were my, but they were like debilitating for me.
Yeah.
And I said I would, and also I started struggling with vaginal atrophy as well. And that was shown in the way of incontinence, which was like, that was soul destroying for me. That literally.
Yeah.
And my job is to be very, very physical, and it was impacting that. So anyway, I went to see him, and he just said, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to suggest that, first of all, we give you an antidepressant. And I was like, I didn't come for that, because that was his first point of contact. He particularly wanted to give me a venlafaxine, which has off-label benefits for menopause, you know, with the hot flashes and everything. I didn't have hot flashes. We call them flashes over here, by the way. And then the next point of call, he came back and he went, yes, I'm going to give you HRT. I think you're a candidate. Here's a prescription for you. And it was for Premarin, and it was a synthetic hormone, the one that's derived from the pregnant mare's urine. And I just said, this is not what I want. I'm not going to take this synthetic HRT. This is bioidentical. I need to have something that is going to match my body. And he just said, it's all your insurance covers. And I said,
I mean, it's shocking.
And I went,
it shouldn't be this way.
We've moved on so far. And then I just said, I don't care. I'm going to pay for it. I mean, I was in the position to be able to say that, and I'm not trying to boast or anything, but I just was also very desperate. So he came back with another. And in the meantime, I have my list of FDA approved bioidentical hormones, which you call body identical in the UK. These are regulated bioidentical hormones. I had my list of them, and I gave him them and said, I want one of these. He came back and refused to give me a progesterone because he said it wasn't necessary. He just didn't have the education. I walked out of there in tears and just thought, this is crazy. I'm educated my doctor. He was pissed off. He didn't want to meet a woman to be going and telling him what to do. He later actually emailed me and apologized and told me that I was in fact right and he was going to change his practice, which I think is really great of him, but that's going
to
be...
But I mean, look, it's amazing that you have that confidence and knowledge to do that. But you imagine all these thousands of women that don't know at all what to do, what to ask, and you just assume, you know, you assume.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I don't know over there, but the NICE guidelines, 2015 menopause guidelines, the first line treatment is HRT. It's not antidepressants. So the frustration here is that GPs aren't even up to date with the NICE guidelines, which are in front of them.
I don't know if they exist over here, though, isn't that? Because I know it's a UK organisation.
It is. There must be something similar. There must be first line treatment is A, B and C, you know, for doctors. But they don't always, you know, they're not always up to date. And also, you know, in fairness to doctors, there's 100 different things they've got to keep up to date with. And I guess that half the point of me building a website around the Facebook group is to host information, you know, up to date, accurate information with a symptom checklist as an example, so that the bare minimum a woman can, you know, come to the group and say, look, I just can't cope with A, B and C. And whether it's Diane's group or my group or both, and we say, here you go, print this off, read this blog, get yourself familiar with it, then go to the doctor and say, you know, I want this, this and this, and don't accept antidepressants if perimenopause or menopause is, you know, is what they say. So it's hard. It shouldn't be up to us, but sadly that's how it is at the moment. And
And I think that it's also worth, I just want to underline what you've just said there. We are talking about people who are candidates for HRT, because there's definitely people out there that aren't. And so for me, if you are going through these symptoms and you have a checklist and you go to your GP and you're not getting the answers, ask for a referral. Just at least go and see a gynecologist, because that's their area of specialty. If you there, I've posted in within my Facebook group, both for the US and for the UK, links to find in menopause specialists. If there isn't one in your area, a gynecologist is going to help you, and even the prescribing nurse will be more informed than your doctor, because that's their area of specialty. And I just think that don't give up just because that was the point of my story about the doctor, is I had to fight him because I knew what I was talking about. Many women don't, and they go in and they're just deflected. And often doctors make you feel overwhelmed and you don't have the confidence to sort of be confrontational. And so you just walk out of there just feeling ignored again. And it's tiresome. It is.
And I think also, to be fair, I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, my symptoms kind of came up bit by bit by bit. So you spend month by month, year by year, thinking it's something else, something else, something else. So a lot of people I've spoken to, it always seems to be this sort of 3-4 year, 5 year gap before you suddenly have this light bulb moment. And that what I want to do is just to stop people. The second they come to the group, I want them to stop having to waste 4 years of life, you know, good life, and actually just get on with it.
And I know that that's something I wish I'd had. And if I actually think back, like, and be completely honest with myself about when things started, like, changing, I would have been 38 years old. It was when I had my last child, and about six months after, my periods were very infrequent anyway from the type of contraception I was previously on. But I had a period every 21 days that was sort of my cycle, very light. But the symptoms leading up to my period changed, my PMS just got worse. And one of the symptoms was this chronic fatigue. And I also started to get a cold every time. And we also know that our immunity is impacted by our fluctuating hormones. And so lots of women's allergies change, or they get, you know, and also stress impacts our immunity as well. All of these things are happening. And so if I were to literally put a line in the sand, for me, I would have been 38 years old. And then I had 5 years of very irritating feelings that didn't impact my quality of life, but I just felt a bit pooey now and again. And then I like remember this incident where at 43 years old, I'd finished an exercise class and I went home and I took to my bed for 4 days. that's how long I just got. And the migraine came on and I couldn't get out of bed and whatever. And then it passed and I just assumed I'd got a virus. You know how things go. And it was like you said, then things kept creeping up. And one of the things I always say to people, and I wonder if you're the same, Katie, is that, you know, I think I've been blessed with every single symptom under the sun purely so that I can talk about them, because I'd get one, then another, the brain fog, the emotional component, the lying on the couch crying. And then they would maybe ease off a little bit, but then I'd get like chronic depression and some anxiety. And then my periods would change. Like I went through the gamut too. And I think that like that's a really great point you made to say that it doesn't just happen. It can, it's like this.
And also the other thing, even things which we haven't mentioned, like low libido, for example. Now, a lot of people say, well, you know what, you're middle aged, you know, maybe you're a bit overweight, everybody goes off sex, you know, and the vaginal atrophy. I mean, actually, you know, another lady you've probably come across who came with us to Parliament was a lady called Jane Lewis, who suffered terribly. And she's written a book about vaginal atrophy. And, you know, these are such taboo, embarrassing topics of conversation. I mean, my heavy bleeding ended up in a hysterectomy in the end. And, you know, people just don't like to talk about these things. And that's the other thing, is there's the whole embarrassment factor. I mean, who wants to sit in front of a male GP and say, oh, you know, I don't ever fancy having sex, and my husband thinks it's him, and, you know,
And then there's people like Jane, because I do know, actually everyone who you've mentioned has been on my podcast.
They're fantastic.
Because I think we just go in the same circles. But Jane, like, I love the fact that Jane had her husband take photographs, and she took them because she literally wasn't believing. Yeah. So taking visual shots and showing the GP saying, this is what's happened to my vagina. It's, I can't even imagine. And then about like the cultural side of things. I mean, I lived in the East End of London once, went to a Sikh doctor about a mole that was on my bra strap line, and it was irritated, and I thought it needed removing, and he refused to examine me because it meant taking my top off. And so I even think about the cultural side of things, where women don't have healthcare like to the necessary level that they're going to get. And I just think that if in those circumstances you can just say, I need to see either a female doctor, I need to see a nurse, or I need to see a gynecologist, just ask what's the worst that can happen. I think that you can't, for me, I couldn't have carried on without eventually going on HRT. But I know we've run over a little bit on the show, but I just want to talk about HRT a little bit as well. So our candidates can take it. I've actually only been on it 4 or 5 months now, and I'm on a bioidentical regulated hormone with estrogen, with a micronized progesterone to go with it, and it literally has lifted that dark cloud from me. I no longer look like Eeyore now, you know, like I've got my vitality back. But I really like to talk about HRT as part of the solution. I think it should be the first line of treatment, definitely, because without those hormones, we can't change the other things that matter. And so this is where my conversation comes in. So I like to remind women that, you know, if you are unhealthy and to the point where your health markers aren't okay, where you're overweight or you are unfit, you're going to struggle more through menopause. Mm. In fact, we have studies coming out of our, you know, cahoots about it. We know for a fact that if you have a higher level of lean body mass, if you have more lean muscle than you do fat, your chances are your vasomotor symptoms are going to be reduced. You're not going to have the hot flashes and the hot sweats. There's been a great study done on that. And I think that, to me, HRT allowed me then to refocus on getting my nutrition sorted, getting my exercise plan back, managing my stress, focusing on my sleep again, because all of those things impact your quality of life as well. And so I don't think that personally that HRT is the absolute panacea. I think what it does is it helps women get their life back and helps them feel normal again, so they can focus on those things that can directly affect their quality.
Well, I think also women need to realize this isn't an unnatural substance. This is just replacing what your body should be making you know, naturally anyway, in order to function normally. And we're all living, you know, in the old days, you know, people stopped working at 50 and people died young. We're now living much longer lives. And, you know, and the good thing, you know, it gets a lot of bad press, but HRT prevents osteoporosis, you know, helps with things like heart disease. You know, there's lots of benefits as well as just feeling fit. I mean, I feel absolutely and utterly fantastic now. I mean, I've got an estrogen implant because I had a hysterectomy, so I don't need the progesterone because I don't have a womb. Yeah. But what it's given me is my brain function back of a 25-year-old. I'm full of energy. I'm so happy. I'm running at 100 miles an hour doing everything, you name it. It's just given me my life back. And I think
the preventative things, I think we should talk about that, because I think it's so great to for women to know that while they're on HRT, they are likely to stop themselves from dying from the biggest killer of women, which is heart disease, cardiovascular disease. And these are all things that can be prevented by lifestyle changes as well, like exercise and nutrition and stuff. And so, like, to me, it's this full holistic package. But I literally lost the ability to be able to take care of myself properly and until I introduce HRT into my life.
Yeah, and your hormones are balanced, and then you can do anything. And I feel the same.
Yeah, and so I think it's such a great conversation to have, and I really love that this is happening. This conversation, I do wish it was happening a little bit more over here, and I think it might be because I often think that the UK it is a bit more of a melting pot because it's smaller and it's a little bit more condensed, and we just
have
And so it's just because I think we're in a bit more of a sprawling.
I think so. You're a much bigger country. And also what's happened is, you know, and it's the nature of Facebook. You know, I started on Facebook when my daughter was age 12 to keep her safe. And suddenly everybody joined Facebook when it began. And most of the people who are now able to talk about stuff on Facebook are midlife women, because all the kids have now sort of buggered off onto Snapchat. And so you've got all these celebrities, all these women who have ended up on Facebook. And so we've got a platform now to all talk and compare notes. And you know, we've got loads and loads of celebrities, all of them now. You know, Andrea McLean, who I interviewed last year, I'm interviewing Lizelle this summer. You know, we're doing a spa day for our birthday in July. You've got all sorts of television celebrities who are talking about it. So I just think everyone's talking about it. We're making a massive noise. It'll take a lot of time, but it is changing over here. And it will definitely change in America. It just might be slower because of the size and possibly because of the cost of, you know, the healthcare.
Well, the healthcare thing is definitely an issue.
And then
I'm just going to finish by sort of like, so I know I'm going to be speaking to Lizelle and Meg Matthews as well. And I'm glad that people with a platform are actually like talking about this to just make it a more mainstream conversation, because the minute that this is a normal conversation, then it is no longer so shameful to talk about, right? If it's just, I have mentioned this on the podcast before, so you can tune out if you've heard this, anyone listening, but you were talking about education being a key point where children talk about STDs, they talk about birth, puberty, all of those things, and then we don't have the menopause issue. And because I studied anatomy and physiology, I was so excited when my son started to study it. And when I got to the back of his book and there was a whole section missing on menopause, I was incredulous.
Yeah.
But the great thing about it is when he went to his psychology class, they talked about the mental health impacts of a certain time of a woman's life. You know, and it was a broad scope thing. And the teacher said, does anybody know what it is? It usually happens to women in the 40s, 50s. And my son was the only one who put his hand up. I was very proud of him.
Proud mummy moment.
The menopause. But, you know, but at least that's a conversation that the mental health community completely acknowledge, and they have for a long time.
I mean, Diane and I spoke at a very large mental health conference called This Can Happen last October, and our platform was menopause and mental health in the workplace, and that in itself was amazing, because it was about talking about supporting you know, managers, your line manager, to recognize, you know, when women have symptoms and and look at how they can support them better. So, you know, things are changing for better. Right. And it's not all doom and gloom, because the Latte Lounge website's celebrating all things midlife, you know, so, you know, because there's lots of lovely things. And I think we just need to feel well and happy in order to then go off and do other, you know, more upbeat things.
You know what? One of the things that I know, that things calm down. That stuff start to calm down. I'm now postmenopausal, and I know I'm on HRT, and I know things are easier. But my other symptoms that were, you know, at its peak about four or five years ago, have definitely subsided. And I feel like there's a bit more control there again. And I know that women do feel like this sense of huge relief. And I think they talk about it like as a big, like enlightenment period. Or I think they're just saying bits, thank God for that. Thank God the worst of it's over. And if that's even just the least that you get from the end of menopause, then thank God for that. So
yeah, absolutely.
But so listen, Katie, thank you very much for the conversation. I really wanted just to have a really real conversation with someone who's been through a really rough time, has sort of come through it with this great resource for women anyway. And just the fact that you're just promoting education and awareness, I think it's fabulous. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. It was lovely chatting to you too. And hopefully you can write us some lovely fitness blogs one day too for the website.
Yes, I'm
please.
Do that, definitely. So
well, thank you for having me on. It's lovely. It's lovely to sort of speak to someone on the other side of the pond. Makes a nice change, even if you're where are you from? Are you a Geordie?
When people say that, it makes me like sigh a little bit. I'm from Middlesbrough.
Okay, because my mum's from Newcastle, so you just sound like my mum. That's why
I have become more Geordie since I left the UK. Why? Because I currently live in Texas, so it makes more sense. But
no.
I am coming home this summer, so I'm excited to go and get some fish and chips and some
lovely
chocolate creamer cares. But Katie, thank you again. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
I'm going to, like, in the show notes, show people how to get to the website. There's some great resources on there, some great articles. I've referred to them into my own personal Facebook group as well, just to help people out. So yeah, keep doing what you're doing. I love it.
Thank you. Lovely chatting to you.
Okay, thanks. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on my services, head over to my website at fitandchips.com. That's like fish and chips, FITNCHIPS.com. Or you can head over to my Fit and Chips Facebook page too. If you leave me a comment or if you contact me, I promise I'll do my best to respond to all of your questions. The views and advice expressed by myself in this show are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always go straight to your doctor. Take care. Love you. Bye.